Philadelphia superstar, our good buddy Sal Palantonio, is in our studio. Superstar. There is never news in Philadelphia.
I'm here to support your book.
Well, you guys have
always done a great job supporting my books, and I wanted to come out and support Mike's Rules of Sports.
Appreciate that. We're signing the books in the break. A gentleman came up and actually had me sign it in crayon.
That was funny.
That was good.
Yeah, I felt really at home.
I've been flipping through this. Did you write some of this, Gordon?
Of course I did.
Most of the misspelled words were
I used some big words. I just didn't spell them right.
I want to ask you.
Pictures of Reggie White.
Contribution.
Before we get to football and Donovan McNabb and everything else, which is what you were most associated with, you certainly cover your share of baseball as well, and your thoughts on this conversation, it comes up every single year, particularly in years when we're coming off a Yankee World Series championship because of all the hating that goes on out there regarding the Yankees. The owner of the Brewers says, I can't even sign Prince Fielder, and the Yankees are spending $200 million on players. Keith Law comes on and says they don't have to compete with the Yankees. Now, I would argue they may not have to beat out the Yankees, but they do have to compete with the Yankees to sign Prince Fielder, right? Or players of that ilk.
Right.
If the Yankees can spend $33 million on a third baseman and the Brewers can't, that is a direct competition. Your thoughts in general, Sal, on the salary situation, the revenue situation in baseball?
The Yankees?
Yeah.
We're here in Philly. Come on!
Well, the owner of the Brewers brought up the Yankees. The Phillies, for the record, have the fourth highest payroll in baseball at $141 million.
Yeah, 142. You know, to me, when the Phillies decided to get in the game, you know, and start to go after the big free agent players and sign players to long-term deals and become a big market team and compete with the big guys like the Yankees and the Red Sox, I think that's when the Phillies got there and said, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be part of what happens in baseball. You see it. Fans have come out. Places packed. They had attendance of 103% last year, which is second only to the Red Sox. That's why in this town right now, the Phillies are king.
When did this change in football? Like, when did we come over to where everybody, you know, is because you've had the haves and the have-nots, but we've equaled that out with the system they have now.
Well, I think what changed specifically, you talk about Phillies and Eagles?
No. Football in general, NFL in general.
How did football figure this thing out?
Well, that baseball hasn't at this point.
They figured it out in the 60s with revenue sharing.
Yeah,
I mean, that was the key. They said, or Pete Rozelle said, you know, the Green Bay Packers in a small market team, a team that's owned by the fans, by the citizens, is going to be just as important to the National Football League as the New York Giants, the New York Jets, the Washington Redskins, all those big markets, because they shared television revenue right from the beginning. And, you know, the reason why the Phillies and the Yankees and the Dodgers and all those teams have such a high payroll as compared to a lot of the small market teams, Kansas City and Milwaukee, is because cable television contract.
Right.
That's the big difference in these markets.
And to the everlasting credit of the late Wellington Mara, he went along with that when, in many cases, some people might not have, and that is splitting up the national TV money equally. And again, for those who don't understand this, it's very simple. Every pro football game is nationally televised, so basically all of the money the NFL teams make come from their national television contract. In Major League Baseball, only a portion of the money is national TV money. The Yankees have the YES Network, which is worth over $1 billion. There was a time when the Montreal Expos were getting a total of zero in local revenue from their local broadcast TV and radio. That's where the majority of the inequity comes in. And then there's ticket sales and everything else. Let's go back to what you said a moment ago, Sal, and that is we walked in here this morning. There were a few people in Donovan McNabb jerseys. There are a lot of people in Phillies jerseys that showed up to see us here this morning. Now
it has become a Phillies town.
Yeah. And that's the winning, right? I mean, that's what the Eagles have sitting out there in front of them, five times to the NFC Championship game, once to the Super Bowl, but never quite getting over the hump.
Well, that parade that they had after the World Series Championship two years ago was a phenomenal scene down Broad Street. It was on Halloween. It was unbelievable. And I think the Eagles saw that and said, we got to get a piece of this. And they realize now that because Donald McNabb couldn't get him to the promised land, that they had to turn over this roster and go to the Kevin Cobb era. And there's this palpable sense between the Phillies and the Eagles of a real competition now for the hearts and minds in Philadelphia. And right now it's a Phillies town. As you can see, everybody's wearing red.
Yeah, they are. You know, they should be very excited about their team. Again, on the
McNabb. What a crowd, too. Man, you guys get a great crowd.
And people, to their credit, they're lined up early. Now, a lot of them don't have jobs, so they have nothing else to do.
No.
They're looking for the free T-shirt.
No, that's not true. This is a Philly crowd right here. You can tell. These people are juiced up.
As far as McNabb, I had you on after the trade, and I asked you if all three quarterbacks had 1 year left on the deal, and that was a big reason why we saw what happened. And I said, if all three had 3 years left on the deal, would this happen? You said no. Let me ask you this. If of the five NFC championship games the Eagles were in, they went to the Super Bowl the one time, what if they had one Super Bowl title? What if Donovan McNabb won them a Super Bowl? Would this have happened?
You know, I think that's a really difficult thing to sort of extrapolate out.
I mean, I know. That's why I'm doing it to you.
I used a big word there.
You did. Greeny will explain it to me in the break.
No, I think if he had won a Super Bowl here, obviously his legacy would be different, how people would feel about him and Andy Reid. I mean, there was a cartoon yesterday by the Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoon, editorial cartoon of Sidney Wilkinson in the Philadelphia Daily News, two guys sitting in a bar in Philly. There's a picture of McNabb on the up on the screen, and they say one down, and then there's a picture of Andy Reid up on the screen, and one to go.
Now.
So, I mean, there's a lot of sentiment in town that, you know, they were joined at the hip, and now we got rid of one, and we can't wait to get rid of the second guy. So I think if he had won a Super Bowl, it'd be a completely different feeling about McNabb and Reid. No question about that.
Mike Sal Palantonio was here. You know, we did a lot of interviews with local media here in Philadelphia in advance of our coming on the book tour, and people were asking a lot of questions about McNabb. The national perception of McNabb versus the local perception of McNabb are so totally different. Most people are accustomed to rooting for teams that haven't made it to five conference championship games in the last 11 years and made it to a Super Bowl. Most people look at the numbers, and they are better. Donovan McNabb's numbers are better than John Elway's numbers were at the same points in their career, at the point where Mike Shanahan became their head coach. Elway had been in the league a little longer. But even with the Super Bowl appearances, McNabb's postseason record is better. His touchdown to interception is a million times better. So the national perception, which you're well aware of, obviously, versus the local perception, how different are they?
I think they're very different. They're different in the media. They're different among fans. But, you know, people here remember this, that he's come up short in those NFC championship games. Yes, they got to five of them. They lost four. They lost three of them that they were favored to win the football game.
Right.
There's no question about that, that people realize, okay, he didn't bring them back in a lot of fourth quarter comebacks like John Elway. I mean, Elway's legacy, you want to compare numbers, all right? He went to five Super Bowls, Mike, and, you know, he also had the greatest legacy of comebacks, especially in the fourth quarter where McNabb fell short. And I think that's what people would remember when they're comparing John Elway to Donovan McNabb in this town.
Mike and Mike, Zap Palantonio is here. He's going to stay. We're in Philadelphia supporting our book, Mike and Mike's Rules for Sports and Life. Up next, the big question. Who has the better year? McNabb and the Eagles? Excuse me, Cobb and the Eagles.
Yeah.
Talk about the ultimate Freudian slip. Cobb and the Eagles or McNabb and the Redskins? Sal answers that question next. Mike and Mike in the morning.
ESPN Radio.
Our buddy Sal Palantonio is here. What else would you expect? We're in Philadelphia on our book tour. And I want you to hear a couple of things, because certainly we opened the show, Sal, by pointing out there were a few Donovan McNabb jerseys in the room. And just at the mention of his name, a few people booed. So I said, let's do it again.
That's a shock.
I said, all right, guys, react verbally however you choose, but let's keep it clean. I say Donovan McNabb. You say? I don't know how well that comes across the air. Certainly it is far more booing than it is cheering here in the room. That sentiment may actually spill over to one of the Eagles' highest profile players. DeSean Jackson, their young star home run hitting wide receiver, was a guest with Mike Missanelli here on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philly yesterday. Listen to this question and answer.
Your general reaction when you found out that they had made the trade, McNabb gone?
My reaction, is time for a change. We got some young players here. Like I said, I'm just excited about everything, and, I feel all the players on our team is excited about it also.
Sal, it was time for a change.
I was listening to Missanelli's show last night, and I almost drove off the road when I heard that. Because I'll tell you that, but it's not surprising that DeSean Jackson would say that, but to say it just after Donovan McNabb was introduced in Washington. Because if you remember, after the first loss to Dallas, actually the second loss to Dallas, the first of the back-to-backs in December, Donovan McNabb said, we showed a little bit of our youth. Remember he said that after the game?
Yeah.
And I remember going into the locker room the next day, and DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin and some of the others, but specifically Jackson and Jeremy Maclin, like, dog, come on. We listen, we've been carrying this guy. You know, at this point, what is he doing? You
know, God forbid, God forbid anybody get criticized and handle it. You know,
Well, no, but seriously, Mike, come on. You can't be calling out your young players after a loss to the Dallas Cowboys when you, in particular, didn't play very well. I mean, you know, hey, there's no I in team, right?
It's not like he does that all the time, though. I mean, Donovan didn't regularly throw people under the bus, did he?
Nevertheless, he played poorly in that game, and for him to call out the young players, and guess what? They're showing their youth now, right? I mean, they got rid of a lot of older players, and
you know what?
They believe in this young crop of talent.
Here's the thing:
and they wanted to surround him with they wanted to give them a nice young quarterback to grow up with in Kevin Cobb.
So you know what? Now, let's see what you do. Everybody can shut up now, and everybody can just play. DeSean Jackson got what he wanted. They got their youth. They have their quarterback now.
Well,
so now we'll see.
But also Andy Reid got what he wanted. I mean, Andy Reid, in the end, you know, was the one who finally made this decision.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And so we're going to also find out if Andy Reid can do it with Kevin Cobb. I mean, we're going to find out about both.
Yes, we are.
Donovan McNabb does it with Mike Shanahan, then we'll know what was Andy Reid was the problem.
Yeah.
Mike, Sal Palantonio is here. So let me ask you this question. The NFC East, almost always the most compelling division in pro football. Whoever would have thought we'd have an offseason in which the Dallas Cowboys would seem like the rock of stability in the division, but that's the way it feels. Who's a better football team in 2010, the Redskins and McNabb or the Eagles and Cobb?
Listen, are you going to escort me into my car in the parking lot?
No. You give us an
option. I won't get from Rock Bottom Brewery out to my car in the parking lot. No, I mean, it's going to be the Eagles, I mean, clearly. They've got a crop of young talent. You know, for the most part, their offensive line is set. Yeah, do they have a problem at center? They're going to have to shift around some players until Jamal Jackson comes back, maybe week two, week three. They have an issue at right guard right now. They're going to have to settle for sure. Their defense was 19th in scoring defense last year. That's going to have to be fixed. I mean, it was the lowest of the Andy Reid era. Do they have a hole at right cornerback? Yes, but overall, their team is much, much better than the Washington Redskins currently is right now. Now, Shanahan's got a great resume. He's got a Pro Bowl quarterback to work with. He's got a suspect offensive line. He's got older running backs, Willie Parker, Larry. I mean, he's collected older running backs.
Yeah.
I mean, and so the Eagles are younger, and I think they have a much better core of talent.
I
think they'll win more games. Now, they have a very tough home schedule.
Yeah.
If you look at what the Eagles have, Minnesota coming in. They have Indianapolis coming in, Houston, Atlanta coming in. I mean, they got to play the Dallas Cowboys. They've got five or six games against teams that are going to be in contention for playoff spots at Lincoln Financial Field. It's going to be and don't forget, Washington Redskins come back with Donovan McNabb. It's going to be a very, very good season. A lot of exciting football, Lincoln Financial Field.
Yeah, I don't know if I completely agree with you about which is a better team right now, but we're going to find out.
You think the Redskins are better than the Eagles?
I think there's a possibility.
In what way? Give me one position where they're better.
Quarterback?
Well, okay. Beyond that, right now, maybe.
Quarterback?
What else?
Running game?
Not running. I mean,
defense.
I take LeSean McCoy.
You go ahead and take LeSean for as much as they run the ball.
Leonard Weaver.
We'll see who has a better running attack when the year's over. I think it's going to be Washington.
That's suspect.
So Washington has a better defense right now than the Eagles. I think they're a little better than the Eagles right now. But you know what? Regardless, the linchpin here is going to be the quarterback. What does Kevin Cobb do?
Well, Kevin Cobb in his only two starts, back-to-back over 300 yards.
Yeah.
First player ever to do that in his first two starts.
Sure. Okay?
Now, I'm not saying, listen, 96 passes is not a body of work that you can judge a player on. But here's what we know about Kevin Cobb. He's tough. Texas high school football guy.
Sure.
Dad was a coach, so he's got a tough skin. And, you know, I'm not a scout of players, but I rely on Ron Jaworski. And Ron Jaworski told me, listen, the guy is accurate.
That's
accurate. That's a key.
Yeah.
Donovan McNabb finished 20th in the NFL in accuracy in his 11th season.
As I said.
And Matt Castle was the only one who was worse among starting quarterbacks in the National Football League.
As I said, in his 11 years, he's only been 60 or better four times, McNabb.
Completion percentage.
The high was 64%. Career, he's 59. You're right. The accuracy
is
huge.
Listen, it appears that Cobb has the personal makeup to make it in this town. That's very, very important. Tough skin. He also looks like he has the athletic makeup to make it in this offense, okay? But, you know, it's potential get coaches fired. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see.
We will.
But he's, it's right there.
It is. I agree with that. It is there. We see if it comes to fruition.
I think we can all tell what Golic thinks about this. That brings us to Mike's helpful tip of the week, which is brought to you by your neighborhood Ace Hardware store. Golic's helpful hint today is for all of you in this room, Eagle fans. And that tip is, be careful what you wish for.
That's all I'll say. Maybe it's going to turn out to be the right move. And under business circumstances, again, I understand the move with everybody's contract situation, but a lot of
people... So you're saying the Redskins are going to win more games than the Eagles?
I'm not saying that yet. If you ask me right now, I'd say yes. But
I think without putting words in your mouth, is he would have liked the Eagles to win more games this year with McNabb than with Cobb. I think that's what you're saying.
Yes. Like I think right now, if McNabb was...
You come with your own translator?
Yeah, exactly. I said this from the beginning. If you ask me who's a better team next year, if Cobb's a quarterback or McNabb, I'm going to say with McNabb they're a better quarterback. It's my opinion. So my thought is for everybody, just it may work out. My only thought is be careful what you wish for. You got it. Let's see how it works out.
You can log on to ESPNRadio.com, watch Ace Helpful Hardware videos, and vote on whether or not you agree with the helpful tip of the week. You could win Ace gift cards only from your friends at Ace Hardware, Ace, the helpful place. This has been a treat, everybody. Say thanks to Sal Palantonios. Thank you, Sal. Such a good friend to us, and we really appreciate you coming out.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
And what a pleasure to welcome in person the number one baseball insider in the business. Our buddy Jason Stark is here. Good to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you guys.
And you should know, I say that about Buster when we see him.
I know you do.
I say that about Timmy when we see him.
That's the kind of lying I enjoy, though.
I just roll my eyes every time he introduces somebody as the greatest ever.
And I need you, Jason, to mediate the fight between the Yankees and the Brewers in a minute. But first, you were telling us something during the break that has me very concerned.
Yeah, guys, I was in opening day in Washington the other day, and the commissioner of baseball was present. And he did one of his famous drop-by press conferences where we're all standing outside the elevator lobby talking to the commissioner. And so the usual baseball topics are coming up, and then someone asks Bud Selig, what did you think of the Donovan McNabb trade? This is not a question that I recommend you ask the commissioner of baseball on opening day, right?
Okay.
And Bud gets aggravated immediately. And then he says, you know, I woke up this morning at 5:30 like I usually do, and I was doing my workout, watching a channel, which I'm not going to name. And I'm thinking, I wonder what this is.
Yeah.
And all they talked about was Donovan McNabb. I had to turn it off.
Wow.
And so I know where this is leading. Now we finish up our whole press gathering, and everybody's going to leave. Bud grabs me by the arm and says, I need to speak with you when we're done. And he needs to speak with me about you guys. Because on opening day, he feels you should not be talking about Tiger Woods. You should not be talking about the NCAA Finals. You should definitely not be talking about Donovan McNabb. You should be talking about his sport. So I'm delivering the message from Bud.
Here's the problem that we have.
He's going to send us a stern letter, Greedy.
If we get a stern letter, that would be bad. You know, Dickie V was all upset that Tiger was taking attention away from the tournament, and now the commissioner is upset that McNabb was taking attention away from baseball. You know, we can only do so much.
Here's the thing I suggest the commissioner do. Call Andy Reid and say, Andy, why did you do that? Why did you do it on Easter evening, trade Donovan McNabb?
Well, you know, we knew we were coming here for the show Wednesday. We were hoping that trade would happen Tuesday like there was no tomorrow. They could have held off for that. Okay, so we will talk to the commissioner before we get a stern letter.
I think you should. You should definitely give him a copy of your new book.
Okay.
We'll do that.
We would certainly be happy to do that. In which I have, by the way, I outlined my 12-point plan to become the next commissioner of baseball that is there in Mike and Mike's Rules for Sports and Life. Okay. Help us mediate this fight between the Yankees and the Brewers. The owner of the Brewers says the Yankees are spending all this money and we can't even re-sign Prince Fielder. And the president of the Yankees says, we're giving everybody a bunch of our money. Why don't you shut up? He didn't use those words.
Right.
He said stop whining. He did use the word whining. Jason, who's right?
Okay, well, first off, I do not think that Mark Attanasio was whining. I do agree with him that he was stating a fact when he said the Yankees infield makes more than my whole team.
Right.
This impacts me. And he's right about that. But I also think that the Yankees are right. I also think that Randy Levine is right. Because, you know, I spent a lot of time talking to you guys about the revenue sharing system in baseball. I did a lot of work on this over the winter and documented how much money is being exchanged between teams. And this year we're going to approach $500 million in revenue sharing. And we have at least 10 teams in the sport that are taking in $80 to $90 million and up before they sell one ticket. And look at the payrolls of some of these teams. I mean, you had three teams last year that were under $50 million that were taking in $80 to $90 million and up before they sell a ticket. And I don't blame the Yankees for saying, where's the money going?
Well, then where is the money going? I read the section in the CBA about revenue sharing, and it's supposed to be used to better your team.
I have it right here. Do you want
yeah,
me
to go ahead?
Okay, we apologize. Computer issues. Accordingly, each club shall use its revenue sharing receipts in an effort to improve its performance on the field. Each club no later than April 1st shall report on the performance-related uses to which it put its revenue sharing receipts in the preceding revenue sharing year.
So along with that, we've also heard that there are teams that use it to pay down debt. So if you're putting that in your report, or maybe you're hiding, I don't know. I don't know how accurate these reports are. Does everyone turn it in? How much of these things looked at? I mean, I just think it's such a gray area, Jason, as far as this part of the CBA and how much it's enforced.
Yeah, it's way too gray. I mean, look, we're not going to get that report, the three of us. We're not going to see how these teams.
Especially after we ticked off Bud. Certainly not.
Maybe he'll enclose it with a stern letter.
I've really guaranteed it now.
Yes.
But we really don't know exactly how teams spend their money. I've talked to people in Major League Baseball about this for hours, and they feel like it is a legitimate use of the money to say we're spending it on Aroldis Chapman, we're spending it on our draft picks, we're spending it on our player development system. All of that is fine. But how do we explain these teams that are taking in $80 and $90 million and not spending half that on payroll? How do we explain teams that are spending, that are taking in more money before they sell a ticket and are not spending that on their player development system and their major league payroll combined? I've documented where the money comes from. I'll be happy to explain it to you guys if you want, because it's different than the NFL. It's different than these other sports. I mean, first of all,
but it's there.
It is there. First off, there's a central fund payment that every team gets, and this is $30 to $40 million. Then you have the revenue sharing component. The teams at the bottom, the five teams at the bottom, are getting $35 to $45 million every year. And then you have local TV radio money. Sal did a great job of explaining how this is the one big difference between baseball and the NFL. 29 of the 30 teams get at least $15 million a year in local TV radio money, and many of them get way more than that. And so add it up. We're talking 80, 90 million bucks before you open the gates.
It's an endless, fascinating discussion that we will definitely set aside time for at some point. It's worth pointing out that, and because we've had this conversation with Bob Dupay a million times and Bud Selig a million times, and we'd love to continue it, they have already done more under this regime of bringing revenue sharing to the game than had ever been done before.
Have. No doubt.
That's what Bud Selig does best.
Yeah.
He gets owners to do things they might not otherwise want to do. The Yankees didn't want to give any of their money to these teams for 100 years. Now they're giving some.
Right.
The system isn't perfect. It's better than it used to be.
Well, it's hard to blame the system when there's this much money being exchanged, right?
Perhaps. Gino Auriemma coming up. Mike Krzyzewski coming up. Both within the next 20 minutes. But right now, Jason's going to embarrass us with a live trivia question. Please, no one shout out the answer. I'm not winking. No one shout out the answer. Go ahead, Jason. Start.
First of all, to have the gullet groan in person,
it's
a big thrill. Makes my week.
Okay.
All right, here is the question.
Yeah.
Roy Halladay, who I saw pitch in Washington the other day, threw 47 complete games in the 2000s, that decade. Right? That was number one in baseball. There are only two active pitchers, the big word active, who were within 20 of him. One right-handed, one left-handed. See, I'm trying to help you out here. All you have to do is name those two pitchers.
Okay, we will come back and try and get the answer to that. Meanwhile, nothing championship caliber at all about our performance with Jason Stark's trivia questions. Quickly repeat the question.
Okay, the question is, Roy Halladay, 47 complete games in the 2000s, most in baseball. Only two active pitchers are within 20 of them. One right-handed, one left-handed. You need to guess that.
All right. The lefty, my first thought for some reason was Mark Burley, and I was going to stay with that. And then all of a sudden, it occurred to me Johan Santana pitched a lot in the American League. Most of the time was in the American League. You would think the American League would be more likely to throw a complete game
because
you don't get pinch hit for or anything like that. So it's either I'm going to go either Burley or Santana with the lefty. Mike, take your pick.
Oh, me? Take my pick?
Pick one of those two.
Santana.
All right, we're going to go with, don't say anything. We're going to go Johan Santana for the lefty. And then for the righty, the answer to these questions is always Roy Oswalt. But it can't be. He pitched always in the National League. Would he have thrown that many complete games? People are yelling answers out.
No, they're not.
Well, that one seems to be taking off.
Not enough of them anyway, right?
I don't know.
No one here is helping me.
Okay. I will say this. While we were debating this during the thing, Jason Stark said to us, the right-hander is evil. You haven't even said his name yet. All right, so we were throwing around names. A name just jumped into my head. I'm just going to say it because we have no better guess.
Okay.
Javier Vasquez.
That was a great guess. It's wrong, but it's a great guess.
Stop it!
Javier Vasquez actually did throw more innings than any right-handed pitcher.
I knew he was the answer to something.
That's because he always goes out there, not because he goes nine.
This guy
changes teams every year, if that helps you.
Nobody was yelling out anything for me to help here.
All right, someone yell something. Anyone have an idea? What? Carlos Zambrano? No, he hasn't thrown 27 complete games.
No, get out of here.
Help us, for crying out loud.
You think somebody would get this.
Were we right on the lefty?
No. But Mark Burley would have been a better guess than Santana. If I expanded this to within 25 of Roy Halladay, Mark Burley would
be correct. Burley was the first one that came to mind.
23.
So we got neither one of them right. All right, just tell us who they are.
Just tell us who they are.
The left-handers, you've heard of the left-hander. His name is CeCe Sabathia.
You know, I was thinking of, here's the problem. Isn't he only like 28 years old?
Have you noticed that he pitches a lot?
All right, but I thought to myself, he would have come up like 2 or 3 years into the decade, right? So that was why I wasn't including him.
So well, then, I guess.
Well, Roy Halladay went to the minors during the decade. This is about the art of pitching a lot of complete games. You know, it really wasn't about the 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And so CeCe Sabathia.
We should have gotten
that. I blame you on that one.
All right.
Really do.
All right.
I agree. And the right-hander would be a guy named, I'm sorry about this, Levon Hernandez.
Oh, get out of here.
Levon!
I remember he was always aggravated in Florida. They were throwing him too many innings, right?
Levon would be another guy I would keep in mind if I were you as an answer to many of these trivia questions that you would never think of. Including
this one. I never would have thought of it.
I remember the one year, it was in Washington. He was upset with Frank Robinson, right? When Frank Robinson was his manager and he was upset that he actually said, I'm pitching too many innings.
Right. And, I mean, this has been a recurring theme with Levon wherever he has gone, because his foremost skill in life is you can throw him 150 pitches, 160 pitches, he will throw them, right? He can do that.
Is there any way we can stop doing this?
Golic is growing weary.
I think we got the first one you ever asked right. We got all cocky about it and thought, we could do this every week, and we haven't stopped and we haven't gotten another one right.
I do feel for you. You know, I feel your pain.
You take some perverse pleasure in this.
Actually watch the pain in real life.
Yeah.
Mike, I took a lot of joy in that.
Jason Stark is with us here again. We're in Philadelphia at the Rock Bottom Brewery in the King of Prussia Mall. It's gorgeous. We will be downtown today for a signing at lunchtime. On Broad Street. Then tomorrow we'll be in Pittsburgh. Sunday we'll be in Winnetka, the northern suburbs of Chicago. Monday we'll be downtown Chicago. Next Wednesday we will be in Westport, Connecticut. You can see all of our dates on ESPNradio.com. I'm being told we have some problem. We're not going to be able to get Gino Auriemma here. We should still have Coach K in 10 minutes. That should be unaffected. Meanwhile, we will have more baseball conversation with Jason Stark. So we're 3 days into the season. Give us a couple of, I would guess the most noteworthy thing we've seen so far was the prodigious home run hit by Jason Heyward in his very first major league at bat.
Could we talk about this guy enough?
Please, yes.
What? 20 years old. You know, I've been groping guys for a comparison, who this guy reminds me of. And I thought of Fred McGriff and Strawberry and Griffey. There's also another guy. How about LeBron? I mean, a guy who at this young age just looks like he belongs.
Right.
And I've told you this story before, but I was sitting in a press box last year, and a scout came up to me, and he said, I just saw the player who's going to be the best player in Major League Baseball for the next 10 years, and his name is Jason Heyward. And I don't think anybody has seen anything since that would suggest that was wrong. He is going to be a humongous star. And there are many reasons for that, the power is one of them. But here's the biggest one for me. I was talking to a scout who followed the Braves this spring, and he said, I watched him many games. I never once saw him chase. I never saw him get behind in the count and then chase a ball out of the strike zone because he couldn't recognize what the pitch was. I mean, that kind of pitch recognition is Joe Mauer-esque. You know, it's Albert Pujols-esque. It is rare. It's especially rare when you're 20 years old. And this guy's ability to handle all of this is what's going to separate him.
Quick note on him as well. You know, they couldn't sell a player's jersey until he played in a major league game. And a major league game doesn't become official till the fifth inning. So after the fifth inning of the opening game is when his jersey went on sale, jersey and t-shirts, and they sold over 500 in those next couple of innings. You know,
imagine that.
I mean, just incredible. Really, really incredible stats.
Other things, Jason, quickly, take us with the baseball fans across America. A couple of days into the season, give us a noteworthy moment.
Well, we're in Philadelphia. You might have noticed that. And,
yes.
The Phillies made a statement opening day, and what was important to this team was that their two big acquisitions were Roy Halladay and Placido Polanco, and they both had gigantic days. And, you just get a sense as you watch what Roy Halladay might be capable of in the NL East and how Placido Polanco fits into that two-hole in that lineup of how much better the Phillies can be this year than they've been. And they've been to two straight World Series. This is their best team. They've got questions. They've got bullpen issues. We don't know how either of those guys will play out over the life of their deals. But if you look at how those pieces fit this team right now, that's the reason I picked the Phillies to win the World Series.
And then who's out to a hot start? How about Lincecum throwing incredibly well? Zito throwing incredibly well? So the Giants are sitting there 2-0. They're two top guys. They're throwing smoke. Is it after that do you go, oh, well, now nothing's going to happen after 1-2, or you just wait for 1-2 to come up in the rotation.
Matt Cain hasn't pitched yet. Their rotation is not allowed a run
in this season. That's my point. So, as I look through all the prognosticators, all you guys, not a ton of people are going the Giants' way, but it seems they have some great pitching that stacks up. But is it a 162-game schedule pitching?
Well, my observation about the Giants is that's a team built for October. I'm not sure if they're built for April. Through September.
Get to October, I guess that was my point.
You would not want to play them if they get there. The question is, are they going to catch the ball? Are they going to score enough? They can pitch. We know that.
The one thing that I would be really worried about is you watch Lincecum, and he is as much fun to watch. You know, he looks like a little Jonas brother on the mound and all of that. But that delivery, I would be very, very nervous. Do scouts around baseball tell you they are nervous about that guy breaking down?
Greeny, why was he not the first player picked in the draft this year?
Because he weighs 135 pounds.
And people have been terrified of that delivery. I mean, I'd refer everybody to the great Tom Verducci piece in Sports Illustrated in which he broke down the physiology of the delivery to show that it might not be as ugly as it looks. People keep telling this guy he's not going to hold up, and all he's done so far is just throw the ball past every human being he faces.
Everybody join us in saying thank you so much to our buddy Jason Stark for coming out here today. It's so good to see you.
Great. I'm not thanking him.
Thank you for coming out in support of us, in support of our book, Mike and Mike's Rules for Sports and Life.